Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the Herald and Review dated August 10, 2016. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Fair Admission Up 40%, Champion 85 Bears Featured. Springfield. The state budget mess has come home to roost at the state Illinois State Fair, where admission is up 40%, and for the first time, the preview night is no longer free. Admission to August 11's preview night is $5, half the normal admission, and fair officials have gussied it up with grandstand entertainment and a free concert by some of the 1985 champion Chicago Bears. The gate cost for August 12 through 20 is $10, up from $7 last year, but seniors pay the same $3 fee and children to age 12 are free. Previously, kids had to be 5 or younger to get in without charge. In today's fiscal climate, it's very difficult to give something away for free, State Fair Manager Kevin Gordon said of the new preview night charge. Admission will also be $5 on the last day of the fair, August 21. The fair, which serves as the state's agricultural showcase, is more than 160 years old and will have new carnival rides, new and even more exotic food items, and a brew garden featuring craft beers. Serving as grand marshals on the preview day's Twilight Parade are Dan Hampton, Otis Wilson, and Steve McMichael, all part of the 85 Bears and known as the Chicago Six, which will perform at the grandstand. But the grandstand, once again, will pack more talent, including classic rockers Pat Benatar, Kiss and ZZ Top, country favorites Dierks Bentley and Little Big Town, and modern stars Meghan Trainor and Volbeat. Among the wilder food debuts, turtle funnel cakes, island-style beef skewers, and something called fried funny bones. Even fair officials don't know what they are. To find what you need, try the new smartphone app that lets users find specific food items, add reminders about events they want to attend, create a selfie with the famed butter cow, or map out a strategy. You could schedule your day before you get here if you like, Assistant Fair Manager Sean Mayernick said. New to Happy Hollow, with special events for families and children, is the Zuzu African Acrobat Show and Woody's Barnyard Races, which will allow fairgoers to cheer for their favorite pig, goat, or dachshund. While the emerald ash borer has taken its toll on the foliage, Warren Getch, Deputy Director of the State Agriculture Department, said the Illinois Green Industry Association has donated 200 trees over the next 4 years to restore the fairground forest. The fair's up against entertainment competition unknown decades ago, but Illinois State Fair Queen Abby Foster of Danville, an elementary education major at Ball State University, says it's worth the trip. The thing that stands out about the Illinois State Fair for me is that it's just a great opportunity for family activity and family fun, said Foster, who, unlike most queens, is not from a farm family, but has volunteered for years at country fairs. Here they have a variety of The next article is headlined, Kindergarten Ready, 5-year-olds practice eating school lunch, riding bus. Decatur. After riding in a school bus filled with a dozen plus soon-to-be kindergartners and the sound of several loud pops, Jocelyn Wiseman added one more rule to the list she shared with the group before setting out. Next time, we're not going to let them bring their balloons on, she resolved. He's my youngest, she said. Next Wednesday's the big day. Our next article, hundreds line up for food at Crossing Healthcare. Decatur. Barb Jones wasn't surprised to see a line had already formed by the time she showed up for Crossing Healthcare's healthy food distribution at 3 p.m., 2 hours before the food was scheduled to be given out. Jones was expecting a big turnout, and she was right. By 5 p.m., The line started at the crossing sign and extended down Central Avenue to Warren Street. The sun beat down on a crowd carrying empty boxes and laundry baskets, which some put on their heads to help block the sun. "It's always like this. It's Decatur," said Michael Milam, who had also been in line since 3 p.m. with his father-in-law, John Misey. Jones said she didn't mind the wait. "This is a blessing for everyone," Jones said. "I always expect there to be a crowd." Crossing teamed with the Central Illinois Food Bank and the Northeast Community Fund to bring in 13,000 pounds of food. Crossing employees donated both their money to help buy the food and time to help distribute it. "The need in the community is great, especially with the cost associated with kids going back to school," Crossing Director Tanya Andrick said. "Food insecurity is a real problem here. Times are tight." Northeast Community Fund Director Jerry Peltz said the demand isn't going away anytime soon. "We have new people every month. We had 91 people we'd never served before last month," Peltz said. "When you see lines like this, in this heat, here for something like this, you know there's a need." This was Peggy Johnson's first time going to a food bank. She's diabetic, and medicine ate up much of her money for the first part of the month. "I needed food. This is really helping me out," said Johnson, who rolled a cart holding a box in which she collected fruit, corn, chicken, milk, and eggs. Milam had grapes, apples, tomatoes, potatoes, and corn on the cob for his crate. He passed on the eggplant. By the time he got the milk, eggs, and chicken in the crate, it was a struggle to pick it up and get it in his trunk. "We try to hit up the food pantry when we can to help out our family," Milam said. Crossing Healthcare Medical Director Dana Ray thanked those in line for being patient and said Crossing is planning to have healthy food distributions on a regular basis going forward. This one was part of Crossing's celebration of National Health Center Week. Before food was distributed, Andrix walked through the crowd and talked to those in attendance. She estimated 75% of them were Crossing patients. One family had just brought all the school supplies, but then didn't have enough money this week for food, so the timing was perfect for them, Andrix said. Our next article is headlined, "Attacker Bites Off Victim's Decatur." Police say a Decatur woman waited outside a church Monday night to launch a frenzied attack on another woman, during which she bit off one of the victim's fingernails. The 20-year-old woman was arrested at 10 p.m. Monday and jailed on a charge of aggravated battery. Sworn statements, however, said she didn't emerge from the encounter unscathed. The victim fought back. An alleged attacker was later found to have suffered a fractured eye socket and a fractured nose. But the statements allege the woman who was arrested was the aggressor, leaving the church on North Van Dyke Street first and waiting for the victim. According to the statements, the woman punched the victim at least twice in the head or face while she was on the public sidewalk. The victim stated after the initial shock of the attack, she grabbed the attacker's, LaShonda's, hair with her left hand and tried to strike the woman with her right. She advised her hand landed near the woman's mouth and she bit her right hand, ripping a fingernail off and tearing her flesh. Police officers later examined the victim's hand injury and said the wound was consistent with being caused by a human tooth. The victim also told police she had been attacked by the same woman in January when she had been stabbed in the head with a knife. Police say the records show the woman was convicted of aggravated battery and placed on probation. The sworn statements list no motives for the attacks. Davis remained in the Macon County Jail on Tuesday night in lieu of posting $15,000 bond. If she makes bail, she is ordered to have no contact with the victim. Headline: Woman's Beating Death Nets 3-Year Prison Term, by Hi G. Freeman, a H&R staff writer. Dateline August 9, 2016, Decatur. Brian Brummett, 30, of Decatur, was sentenced to 3 years in prison after pleading guilty to involuntary manslaughter for beating a 38-year-old woman to death. Jacqueline Crenshaw Green was pronounced dead February 14 after Brummett, who is 5 feet 9 inches tall, weighing 300 pounds, repeatedly punched the 5-foot-4-inch woman in the face, head, and body at the home they shared during a Valentine's Day party. Brummett's twin brother, who also lived at the house on the 2300 block of East Finch Drive, was Crenshaw Green's girlfriend, according to a police statement. Brummett was arrested the following day and held in the Macon County Jail on $1 million bond. He pleaded guilty July 11 to one count of involuntary manslaughter, a Class 3 felony, punishable by 3 to 7 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. At his sentencing hearing Thursday, Circuit Judge Thomas E. Griffith silently read a victim impact statement from Crenshaw Green's father. "Not sure why this Brian Brummett wasn't charged with murder," Robert L. Crenshaw wrote in his statement. "Just don't understand that, but he should spend the rest of his natural life behind bars for what he done." He wrote that his wife suffered from strokes and brain damage, and she was partially paralyzed. He said that after she heard the news, she was hospitalized for 7 days. "I can't explain the hurt that my wife and I feel, and the empty world we will have forever. And how can anyone say how Jackie feels or what she would say, as she's dead forever, and we, her family and friends, are at a loss from being with Jackie, as this Brian Brummett took her life." Autopsy results showed that Crenshaw Green died of a subdural hematoma, a brain bleed, resulting from blunt trauma to the head. She also suffered facial bruises as well as multiple bruises to the top of her shoulders, arms, left hand, knuckles, and right side of her abdomen. Brummett, who had no prior adult criminal record, was recommended by the court for impact incarceration, a boot camp designed for nonviolent offenders, which could shorten his sentence to about 8 months. Jacqueline Crenshaw Green, whose nickname was Smiley, served as a certified nursing assistant for 21 years, according to her obituary. Her survivors included her 3 children and 3 siblings. Headline: Early College Prep Advocated, by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer. Dateline August 9, 2016. Decatur. College success begins as early as freshman year of high school. Tonya Hines, coordinator of inclusion and student engagement at Millikan University, spoke at Antioch Missionary Baptist Church's annual back-to-school event on Monday. Doris Lewis, who is chairwoman of education and scholarship for the church, asked Hines to set the tone for the upcoming school year. "Some years," Lewis said, "she asks college students to speak to the high school and middle school students. But this year, she wanted Hines to speak to high school and college students." "They're all winners," Lewis said. "They'll continue to be winners if they stay focused, study hard, and have faith in God and in themselves." Hines is a Decatur native and MacArthur High School graduate who went away to college for 2 years before joining the Army. After her active duty, she joined the Army Reserve, and her service helped her pay for finishing. Hines lived in the Chicago area for a while and worked in the corporate world and in marketing, then returned to Decatur to teach at Garfield Montessori School and John Hill Magnet School before taking the position at Millikan. "Behaviors that will help with the transition to college," she said, "begin with asking questions. It shows you feel confident with challenging your learning environment," Hines said. It shows you're engaged and involved. Sit close to the front, keep up with your assignments, and don't be afraid to ask for help. Heinz also is head of the Long Vandenberg Scholars Program at Millikan. Colleges have help centers where students can go for tutoring and skill building, but in high school, ask teachers, she said. It isn't necessary to load up on advanced placement classes to get into college, she said, but students should challenge themselves by taking rigorous courses and not loading up with fun electives. She also advised taking advantage of any dual credit courses available to save money on college tuition in the long run. She urged the students to seek opportunities for leadership as well, both in and out of school, and to document the dates and positions to use on college applications later. Academic excellence should be their first priority, she said, and will work in their favor in terms of financial aid, and athletics could do that as well. Though the cost of tuition and housing at Millikan is $43,000 a year combined, that number can come down considerably through scholarships. There's no limit to the number of scholarships you can apply for, Hyde said. My daughter is leaving for college on Thursday, and I just had her apply for another scholarship last week. Headline: DeWitt official sees no problem with second full-time job. This is by Edith Brady Lunny, Lee News Service writer, Dateline August 9, 2016. Clinton. DeWitt County Circuit Clerk Pam Barnes defended her decision Monday to keep her public paycheck as she works a full-time job that keeps her from her county office during business hours. Barnes, who was defeated in the March Republican primary for a second term by Michelle Van Vaely, said she sought a legal opinion from state's attorney Dan Markwell on her second job that she said was an offer I felt I could not turn down. She declined to name her employer, but said the work is in the legal profession. The circuit clerk, who is paid $58,363 by taxpayers, said she goes to her county office several nights a week and weekends to complete mandatory reports related to the office that maintains court records and collects fines and fees. I am fulfilling all my obligations, and I'm in good legal standing, Barnes said. Asked if she believes she should collect her county salary when she is working full-time at another job, Barnes said, I think I have more than earned that paycheck. She said she's worked long hours as circuit clerk and been successful in efforts to boost the amount of fees collected by the county. Markwell said Monday that there's nothing in state law that prohibits Barnes from holding her new position. It's up to each elected official to set their own hours, said Markwell, adding that he has received recent work-related emails from Barnes. Barnes, who is set to leave office when Van Vaely takes over December 1, said she has confidence in the five staff members who are running the clerk's office. They are very competent and conscientious workers. They know they can reach me if they need something, Barnes said. When Van Vaely comes into the office in 4 months, Barnes said she would make certain there is a smooth transition by answering any questions. David Newberg, DeWitt County Board Chairman, said he was aware of Barnes's new employment, but declined to comment. When she came into office in 2012, Barnes said she was forced to deal with spending issues by her predecessor, Lori Berger, who also reportedly spent little time in the office after losing her bid for a second term to Barnes in the Republican primary that year. Berger was questioned about decisions related to two funds used for scanning court records. The timing of moving on after public office also came up in 2010, when four-term DeWitt County Sheriff Roger Massey left office 4 months before his retirement and the swearing-in of his successor, Jared Schaffner. Massey had started a career in real estate as Schaffner was handling the day-to-day operations at the department. Headline: Adult Education Back on Track, by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer, Decatur. the Adult Education Department is back up and running at full speed again. At the Tuesday meeting of Decatur's school board, Rocky Wilkerson, Executive Director of Adult Education, told the board that thanks to the stopgap budget passed by Illinois legislators, classes are again rescheduled, and the families and employers who depended on adult education's work are back in business. "We are a second chance for students to complete their education goals," Wilkerson said. "For adults who lack a diploma, are unemployed or underemployed, and in many cases also lack the academic skills to enroll in classes that will lead to job training, the department's bridge classes and job skills training classes are their only opportunity. When Illinois didn't have a budget and adult education was suspended statewide, it was a blow. Classes were canceled and the staff was laid off. When I had to tell my students classes were canceled, it was the saddest day in my 25 years of adult education," Wilkerson said. "I felt like I was taking their last piece of bread off the table." With the return of state funding, federal funding will also be allocated, she said, and a new partnership with the Department of Rehabilitation is in the works. In other business, the school board approved the employment of Beth Poynton as assistant principal at Thomas Jefferson Middle School, renewed the dual credit agreement with Richland Community College, a data sharing agreement with the Decatur Teacher Education Pipeline, and ratified the contract with the A-Team Custodians. The Teacher Education Pipeline is a cooperative agreement among the Education Coalition of Macon County, Illinois State University, and Decatur Schools, training student teachers to work in urban districts with redesigned courses, summer immersion programs, student teaching in Decatur schools, and mentoring of new teachers if they are hired by Decatur, said Shannon Middleman, director of the program. The U.S. Department of Education grant to fund this program requires documentation through data, and students who agree to that also agree to have teacher appraisal data, standardized assessment data, classroom observation data, and employment data shared with the program. All personally identifiable information is. During board discussion items, board member Fred Spanaeus said he is concerned about the plight of fine arts programs in the schools. With the loss of two instrumental music teachers to other districts, he said, he fears that the music programs will suffer. "Fine arts programs are built around teachers who are here for the long haul," he said. Co-interim superintendent Bobby Williams said she, too, is worried about fine arts, as well as other hard-to-fill positions. "We've been checking other districts," she said, "and it does boil down to money. In some cases, the difference between what Decatur pays and what other districts pay is as much as $10,000 a year," she said. Another concern, this time voiced by board member T.J. Jackson, is the departure of Director of Student Services Rochelle Clark. He suggested reviewing the job description for that position before hiring somebody to fill it to maximize the benefit to the district. Headline: Prayer Rally Paves Way for Outreach, by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Four young adults met by happenstance on the lawn of the Macon County Courthouse on July 11. "It was divine appointment," said Briar Hearns, 22, one of the four. They didn't know each other before the prayer rally that was a community response to an officer-involved shooting earlier that day, but they were drawn to each other and almost instantly became friends. "We've known each other less than a month," said James Gorsuch, 19. "We've gotten to know each other really well in that time." The group includes Aliyah Buck, 18, and Rickle Blaylock, 28, and they've already organized a group of young people to mow lawns and pick up trash on the south side of Decatur, an area that Gorsuch, known to friends as Jimmy, wants to particularly target for community outreach. The idea of youth involvement is to be mentors to kids who may not have good adult role models and direct their energies and time to positive and productive activities. The Reverend Courtney Carson is their spiritual advisor. In other cities, people are rioting, Gorsuch said. There are other ways of doing things. There's right ways and wrong ways. The reason why I started doing this, I didn't have leadership as a kid. My parents are great, don't get me wrong, but growing up, I didn't want to listen to anything. I didn't have that structure. I didn't look up to nobody. My parents couldn't control everything when I went out in the world. There were a lot of negative things in my childhood. Youth involvement, he said, is a way for him and the others and anyone who joins their cause to try to keep other kids from going down destructive paths. Brian Elam, a foreman for the city of Decatur, describes Gorsuch as a man of push, drive, and passion. They're involving the folks everybody forgot about, Elam said. Some of these kids have no structure, no leadership, Gorsuch said. You see, the parents are sometimes locked up. They have all kinds of different problems, and that some people don't understand, and we're just trying to be there for them and show them there's a different way of life, a different way of doing things. Blaylock said when he was younger, he was involved in gangs and selling drugs, and he feels as if he took from society during that time. Now I want to give back, he said. I took from the community, and I owe it to the community to give back. Hearns was doing a 42-day mission and was scheduled to go into a training program a few days after meeting the others at the rally. But for reasons she didn't understand at the time, she said, she hadn't actually made travel arrangements. Her mother asked her why, and she said she was waiting on God's direction. Meeting the others gave her the sign she was looking for. They're planning to hand out backpacks full of school supplies as their next project. We're either going to go door to door or set up somewhere, Gorsuch said. Just different things to have us involved with the kids. Also, a youth patrol on the south side to make sure the kids are in on time, to make sure the kids are doing good, to build relationships and just be there for them. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for August 10, 2016. Please stay tuned.